Hello and welcome to the 9th episode of the I Brew My Own Coffee podcast, the podcast for people who care about coffee. I'm your host, Alex Carpenter, and this week we have a special guest, Chris Chicken. He's the founder and man behind Monarch Methods. In this episode, I was really excited. We get to talk a little bit more about some things outside of the coffee industry, but related to coffee in his type of work. We get to talk a little bit about design and the process he goes through for making custom copper kettles for brewing coffee with. This was a really fun episode, and hope you enjoy it. Thanks for listening. Hello, Chris. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
For sure. I'm really glad to have you on here. I know I mentioned or contacted you originally right before the Christmas season, and you were pretty booked since then, so it's kind of fun to have you on the show now and kind of nerd out about some coffee. And in this episode, we'll be talking a little bit about the design and kind of the maker aspect behind what you do. So before we get into all that great stuff, kind of can you give us a little introduction to yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. My name is Chris Chicken, and I started Monarch Methods here in Toronto. Been working in coffee probably, I'd say, around 5 years, 4 or 5 years before I started Monarch. And it was sort of a natural progression. It just came out of working in cafes and sort of getting the coffee bug and getting really into it and getting a chance to nerd out over brewing methods and trying to make better coffee every day and kind of getting frustrated with some of the equipment that was out there. And relied on my background. I've always kind of been a tinker, always made things going back to when I was a kid. So I thought, yeah, I had the tools, I had the materials, and I sat down one night and thought I'd make a better kettle. So
it kind of
spun out from there. Yeah.
Well, kind of taking us back, tell us a little bit about when coffee started becoming a little bit more important in your life.
Yeah, I was in school here in Toronto. I was in university. I was studying music, actually, and I've always played music and always really been into playing and writing music. I play the saxophone primarily, and had worked for a long time as an instrument repair tech. And I actually did an apprenticeship back when I was in high school with a Serbian flute maker, of all things. And so that sort of gave me the some very specific metalworking skills that happened to translate perfectly into this. But yeah, I was in university and was gigging a lot and teaching some music as well, and started working in a cafe because the timing worked really well in terms of opposite schedules. And I'd always been a big fan of coffee. I had a siphon at home. I had AeroPresses. I had Chemexes and stuff at home that I used to brew with, and so it seemed sort of a natural fit, and started working in cafes again, got the bug, and kind of took over my life from there.
Yeah. Interesting. you started just brewing at home before you started working at the coffee shop? You just got interested just through online or something like that?
Yeah. I had actually one of my best friends had been into it for a while and sort of got me hooked. And he had worked in a few different cafes in Toronto. And so I always had good coffee around. I got spoiled pretty early with that.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty great. And then, yeah, the nerdy side of my personality and the sort of tech and design side of me always took over. So I got really into different brew methods. It was a lot cheaper than getting espresso setups at home. So, I could sort of go for the top end, like top of the line stuff, and brew the best sort of drip coffee that I could at home, which that appealed to me
quite
a bit. Yeah.
What was like the first piece of gear that you got then?
It was actually a siphon.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
You went for it.
Yeah.
That's like one of the things we just pull out for special occasions here.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's, I think it's probably what it should be in all reality, but, yeah, there was probably like, I'd say 8 months where I made myself a siphon every morning, but
Oh, really?
yeah,
Wow.
it's a little bit ridiculous,
Hey,
but
that's fun. I mean, we always say it's all about the experience, and that is I think one of the most interesting ways to make coffee. So,
yeah, totally.
you started this company, Monarch Methods. Kind of tell us how that was born, and even maybe behind what's behind the name.
Yeah, totally. So, at the time when I first started it, I had no idea I was even starting a company, to be honest. I made a kettle for myself, because I wanted a better pour over kettle, and the first one went really quickly because I worked in the industry, and so I think I brought it into work one day. I started working at Pilot at that time, where I worked for the last 3 or 4 years. So, I was working at Pilot. I brought it into work, and just about everyone there was like, "Can I have one?" So I was like, "Okay." I was like, "All right, I'll make a few more." And so I made a few more, and then they all showed their friends, and before I knew it, I had a sort of like pile up of people wanting them. So. The name came about because at the time I was living on Queen Street, in Toronto, which is sort of one of the big popular downtown districts. And I was living and working out of a loft space there. I had this big sort of 150-year-old loft set up that I actually had a workshop built into half of it. So, I sort of, once I realized that I was actually going to solidify this into a proper business, I thought I needed a name. So, sort of toyed around with, names based around Queen because of where I was living and the sort of historical importance of it in the city. And then didn't really like the sound of Queen, sort of Queen Methods or Queen Cop or something like that. Didn't sound too good. So I was just looking for synonyms, and I like the alliteration and Monarch Methods. And yeah, it just stuck.
Very cool. Well,
Yeah.
for the listeners out there who might not have seen your kettle that you make, it's different. There's kind of this standard of a kettle that's been around for a while, like a handle and a pouring spout, but you took a different approach to it and a unique approach to the design of it, which is one of the things that has drawn my attention to the work that you've done. And I think I've seen it more and more on Instagram and everything like that. I think people are catching on to it and just the uniqueness of it. What kind of made you decide to do a kettle without a handle?
Well, I was, like I said, I was brewing a lot, both at home and at work. And so when I sort of found myself, I didn't quite have the precision that I was looking for, when I was brewing with the kettles that were out there, that I will not name for diplomacy's sake. But, I was sort of, I just wanted a bit more control. And so I sat down, I actually sat down with a piece of pen and paper and, sort of thought about what exactly about a kettle made it suitable to brew pour overs with, right? So sort of thought about the functionality of it first. And so I realized that I wanted a narrower spout. I wanted a bit of a different shape spout so that it would sort of limit the flow a little bit, which gave you a bit more control over the flow. And then I sort of I thought about having a water dose or a specific water dose. And so I sized the kettles to be, at first I just made the 500 milliliter one because that's how I was brewing Chemexes at the time. And so I sort of stripped everything down to its like bare function and then reassembled it as simply as I could. And that actually resulted in not having a handle. I realized that when I brought the kettles down to 500 milliliters, it was a comfortable grip in the hand, with the insulation on it, obviously, so you didn't burn yourself, but and it became comfortable in the hand, and I think it was the second or third prototype that I realized it, and it gave a whole lot more control over the pour. It brought you way closer to the actual coffee bed itself. I
Almost
find,
becomes like an extension of your arm at this point.
yeah, exactly. And then I'd also had some pretty bad tendonitis from playing saxophone. And so that was sort of on my mind as well, and the ergonomics of bigger kettles with a heavier weight, and the handle sort of cocked your wrist at an angle. And so I thought, it all made sense to me. It all sort of benefited. So.
I think that's one thing that really sets your kettle apart too, is the materials you use. Can you go into a little bit of the story about how that came apart and the decisions that went behind that?
Yeah, for sure. It was sort of a byproduct of the same process where I just sort of stripped everything down to its function. And so I thought about, one of the things that I wasn't too happy with current kettles was their temperature stability, especially with smaller volumes of water. And so it sort of came about almost out of necessity that I needed something that was a cylinder, just to be able to hold the volume in as small a space as possible. And then I also wanted to have a material that would sort of draw in and hold a lot more of that heat to help keep the temperature stable, even when it was down towards the end of the pour and there wasn't a whole lot of water left.
Mm-hmm.
And so of course that material, just through sort of prior experience and past experience and research and testing and whatnot, I found out that, copper was going to be that material. And it's easily available, sort of readily available in the material size and length and everything else that worked really well for the kettle. So it was sort of part necessity and part design that came about and worked really well. And I was also really familiar with working with sort of copper and brass from my background in instrument making. And so it was, it was a natural and sort of easy first step into it, and it worked better. So
I think that's really interesting, because that's something kind of this past week that I've been trying to pay a little bit more attention to, is the temperature without throughout the brewing. It changes quite a bit if you're not paying attention to it. Maybe some people who start the pour and then they go to the computer and forget about it a little bit, and how much of a difference your water can change, and how much of a difference that can make when you're brewing coffee. Can you kind of go a little bit more into detail about that?
Yeah, absolutely.
From the, I guess, from the coffee brewing standpoint too?
Yeah, for sure. I think that was, this is certainly one of the things I was working on a lot when I was at Pilot. I finished up at Pilot Coffee Roasters here in Toronto. Just in November, actually, I made the leap to full-time with Monarch. But
congrats on that.
Yeah, thank you. So before that, I was, I started with them as a barista and worked my way up to be a roaster, and then I headed up quality control for them, and then finally ended up with the role of product innovation. And so what I was doing, a lot of my time at Pilot was spent refining and sort of experimenting with methods of brewing coffee and also roasting. So we were developing different, brewing parameters based on our roast profiles and everything else. And so I was going through brewing a bunch of different coffees in our sort of lab that we had at Pilot, and taking one parameter at a time, one little thing, and really isolating it from the rest by keeping everything else constant, and then just changing that one parameter and seeing what the results were, both through TDS measuring and calculating extraction, but also like through blind tasting.
Mm-hmm.
And so temperature is one of those things that we played around with a lot. And it was temperature is obviously critical when brewing coffee, but it's not so obvious in what ways it's critical,
Mm-hmm.
So we sort of went through and by using hot water towers to sort of maintain our constant supply of hot water and like the exact temperatures themselves, we would isolate each pour basically. And so we'd pour, 50 milliliters of water at a time over a coffee bed, and record the temperature of those 50 mils of water. And then once it had fully dripped through, we'd separate it as its own little sample and measure the extraction just on that sample. And we'd break up each brew. So each recipe we'd break up into, five or six portions of smaller doses of water, controlling each temperature of each pour and measuring the sort of the result of the extraction, and then also cupping those samples.
Mm-hmm.
We found it sort of works out perfectly that as you get towards the end of a brew, especially when doing pour overs, The sort of natural temperature fall off kind of helps, almost like a gentle landing or like a gentle sort of crossing the finish line of the extraction, if you want to think about it that way.
All right. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you kept the water, you know, boiling all the way through or much too hot to begin with, it becomes a little bit tougher to hit that exact mark when you want to finish the extraction.
Uh-huh.
But on the other end of the spectrum, if the water temperature drops too low, you have a very hard time actually finishing that the full extraction within your given water dose, and so you end up with sort of chronically under extracted cups, which no one wants. So,
all right.
Yeah, so it was finding that sort of that perfect balance point. And again, it was a little bit by accident and a little bit by design. The copper does that really well. And what it does is it acts as basically a big sort of like heat sink at first. And so when you pour water in, the copper is going to pull in a lot of that heat right off the bat. And then it's going to hold it there. And so it works really well for at home as well, because you can go straight from boiling into a room temperature kettle.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll absorb, it'll knock that sort of 5 to 10 degrees off the top that you want in order to bring it down to your proper brewing temperature. And then it'll hold it there right until you're done, losing, you know, a degree or two over the course of 3 minutes. And so it sort of works out well where you don't have to pay a lot of attention to it. You don't have to focus quite as much. You don't need all the tools. It just sort of does it by itself and regulates it on its own. So
very cool.
Yeah.
And then you also have a couple unique features to it too, as well, like a leather casing around it that you make too.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a leather wrap that's it's made from 10 ounce or 10 to 12 ounce leather, which is almost a quarter of an inch thick. Really thick, really heavy leather. That's got vents laser cut from the sides of it. So basically what it functions to keep the heat in by insulating the copper from the sort of the colder room temperature. But then also to keep your hands cooler, because obviously grabbing onto a hot piece of copper is not going to feel so great. So
for sure. I don't know too much about metals, but I know people use copper on their house and stuff because it ages and stuff. Does that happen with your kettles? Do you get like after years of use, are you going to see like what they would say a patina on your kettle then?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I leave all my kettles, unlacquered or unfinished beyond the surface itself. And so, the final step of finishing on the kettles is they're actually, sandblasted with glass bead. And so the result is like the surface finish on it, sort of this matte sheen type of thing to it. And the effect is kind of like hammering it at a microscopic level. So it gives you a really like a bright but matte finish. And that will age really evenly, over time. So as you use it, it'll go from, it's sort of like virgin copper is a nice, almost pink color, right? Like mm-hmm. bright orange, kind of pink. And as it interacts with oxygen and your water and, you know, your hands and everything else, it'll darken into a nice sort of rich orange brown. And so that's always been part of the appeal for it, for me too, from a design standpoint, is that the minute you get one of my kettles, it immediately becomes your own. And each one of them ages differently as you use it. So it sort of reflects your use of that kettle, which I've always been drawn to products that last a long time, but that show that time that they've been around.
For yeah. sure. I think that's one of the really cool aspects of this, is that it is kind of like an art piece in your house. It's something that you wouldn't necessarily put in your cupboard and only pull out when you're brewing. I think it's something that I could definitely see just having out on the counter, and it's a functional art piece, you know? And
yeah, for sure.
It's compared to, you know, any other stainless steel kettles out in the market, you know, it's just kind of there. But this one kind of, it definitely seems like it would be a topic to talk about when friends come over or something.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's always been a really big part of it for me too, is I think I part of the reason I'm doing what I am with Monarch is to try and get, I think it's really easy to brew great coffee if you know a little bit about it, and you make a couple of smart choices up front. And so I feel like an easy way of convincing people to make better coffee at home is to make it more, you know, more exciting.
Exactly. And I saw you commented on our Instagram feed, Brian mentioned that he was using your kettle and then he was using a Kalita, and I'll quote him saying, he said, "I believe our tools should not only work properly to produce the best possible cup, but they should also be a joy to use and even a pleasure to view or to hold."
Yeah. And that's, I think I commented just after that on Instagram that he sort of summed up Monarch in a sentence. Like, that's definitely been a huge part of what I've been doing, and what I've been hoping for.
Exactly. I think, I'm a huge fan of them, and I'm trying to convince my wife to be able to put some money towards one. I would love to have one in our house for sure. We have a Kaya scale that we've been using, and it's the same kind of thing, you know. It's kind of a unique piece, and it looks great on our countertop, and it's just always sitting there. So I love coming home and seeing it, and just the aesthetic and the thought that went into that. And I see that same kind of aspect in between all the products you make under Monarch as well.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Very cool. Well, I think that covers everything, but for the listeners out there, Chris was gracious enough to give us a discount on, I think, free shipping in the U.S. And yeah, we'll have full details on the post on our website under our podcast when this is released. But definitely check that out. And then, Chris, for the listeners, where can they find you online? How can they follow along with what you're up to?
Yeah, it's pretty easy to find. It's just, the website is just monarchmethods.com, spelt as you would guess. And a quick Google search for copper pour over kettle or Monarch Methods should bring you there. And then aside from that, I'd say the most up-to-date version of things is always on Instagram for me. So I've actually got a few exciting things coming out in the next week or two. So it's certainly worth keeping in touch, because it'll be on Instagram first. So
awesome. Well, yeah, we're definitely looking forward to that. And thanks again for joining us.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
All right. Take care.
Yeah, you too.